Hey folks, patrons, left reckoners, welcome to the post-game 13. I'm Matt Leck, with me David Griscom. Hi David.
How's it going, Matt? You getting prepped for this weekend?
This weekend, you mean the Easter weekend? Or
it's a big weekend, yeah. The man's going to rise.
I've been through 30 or so of these, and I haven't seen that yet. So.
I'm a big proponent. Like, I grew up, you know, in a non-Christian family, but obviously surrounded by a lot of Christianity. I like Easter. I think Easter is a lot of fun. And I think it's about time that, you know, us like secular folks just start enjoying Easter. It's like, why not? It's like a nice day. You wear a cool hat.
The coolest thing is, I don't know, did you get the basket hidden?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I did all that shit.
You know? So that is awesome. And that is something like you would, like, honestly, like, I would believe in God just so I could bring the...
just so you could get the basket of chocolate.
Bring the basket back. Cause, and it's funny because I always have a gift in that basket, too. And one year, I got Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. It's Pet Detective. And this is why there's a problematic bit about at the end of that about it's either a trans person or a cross dresser or something like that.
Oh, is there really?
There is, yeah. Like, it's like a major like part at the culmination of that plot. Anyway, the totality of that movie. So I got that for Easter. I remember finding it in the oven. That's where my basket was. And I was a big Jim Carrey fan. And so popped that in. Loved it. Thought it was hilarious. Just laughed. I go to a sleepover at my friend's house. And I wanted to take that movie. My mom wouldn't let me for some reason. She said my parents were going to watch it. So I go over to that sleepover. I come back from the sleepover the next day. And my mom says that unfortunately the VCR ate that cassette.
Oh boy. And censorship.
So I bought that. I'm like, oh shit, that's very unlucky. The VCR has never done that to any tape in the history of us watching VHSs. But very unlucky that my brand new Ace Ventura thing. And then it wasn't until like I was in high school where I'm like, wait a second.
And then you demanded that they buy you a new copy.
Yeah, I demand this on Blu-ray. This is out, and I demand the full screen version because I don't want to waste any of my television screen. But yeah, that was I don't know how I got it. That's my Easter story. That Ace Ventura being censored. Yeah.
Did you watch a lot of Jim Carrey stuff growing up? Like
Dumb and Dumber. Dumb and Dumber was the gold standard of movies, but the minor ones I didn't. Like, so Cable Guy, yes. I missed The Mask for some reason. So that was always, that was kind of like, it was strange to me because that was big culturally. But Dumb and Dumber, of course, like that was my favorite movie. I mean, I think that still holds up actually, honestly.
Dumb and Dumber is good. I've been doing a little bit of a rewatch of those bad ones. We did Adam Sandler recently.
Mm.
So we did Happy Gilmore again. What else? Oh, because we were doing Coming to America.
Yeah.
The Eddie Murphy, which is so good. I haven't seen the new one yet, but
I want to see the new one.
The original is incredible.
There was that new, what was that movie Eddie Murphy was just in? That was also on Netflix. That was pretty funny, actually. So, I mean, look, I don't expect much from Coming to America, but... Comedy, was Dolomite Is My Name. Yeah, I thought Dolomite Is My Name was funny and a good movie. But you know, there's not, I feel like they don't make comedies the way they used to anymore.
Well, it's like those comedies, like they weren't believable. They were extremely like silly and over the top. And like, there's some decent, I don't know why I don't want to say that, but like, you know, yeah, I think they don't make comedies in that way where like, everything has to be so believable and they just try to create like funny situations, right? Like Stuber is absurd, but like the idea of like a Uber driver and a police officer ganging up together is like, you know, at least somewhere applicable, like, you know, imaginable in like the realm of possibility versus like Soul Glow and Coming to America or like Happy Gilmore where like a failed hockey player just becomes like a incredible like PGA Tour champion.
Yeah. Yeah, like the only like comedies I think Andy Samberg movies are pretty funny. Like Pop Star is very funny to me. Very funny movie. But yeah, like It does feel like there's a glut of comedies whenever I want to, and also it's just harder to laugh, honestly, not to get too depressing, but like I remember like very regularly laughing so hard that my stomach hurt, like basically in
Yeah.
college, and like that's rare now. You don't it, things don't get you as much as they
Now
used
that
to.
weed's legal in New York, you can finally smoke weed again, Matt, which I'm
Oh
sure
yeah,
you're
that might
excited
make me, yeah,
for.
might reopen comedy to me. Yeah, don't look too closely at the background. Yeah, so well, let's move on to another kind of funny topic. You
Honestly, someone
were,
who made us laugh so much, laugh and laugh and laugh, and
yeah,
been stolen from us.
I was kind of pleased that you weren't aware of this. So he's back, ladies and gentlemen. Donald Trump Mar-a-Lago wedding speech. Of course, it's TMZ covering it, getting the video. Because that's where Donald Trump news you can expect to find there from now on. Enough talk about the couple. Enough about the couple. Let's talk about me. Yeah, he was at John and Megan Arrigo's wedding, and I believe John is in the car sales industry. So happy, I'm not joking about that. I'm so
Big
good.
one.
Good job,
God, that
everybody.
dude, that's insane.
And Trump breaks his silence. Of course, at Mar-a-Lago, because you need to make sure that real estate investment, people have a reason to go there and get have their wedding there. So, even if it's a car salesman, it's Beyonce or anything like that. But here is Trump's return, and oh, I got to share sound with David here so he can hear this. He's playing the hits, folks. He doesn't have any new tricks, but it's fresh because we haven't seen him in a while. So here he is.
I turned off the news. I get all these flash reports, and they're telling me about the border. They're telling me about China. They're telling me about Iran. How are we doing with Iran? How do you like that? Well, they were ready to make a deal. They would have done anything. They would have done anything. And this guy goes and drops the sanctions, and then he says, "We want to negotiate now. We're not dealing with the United States." And they went, "Oh, no, they don't want to deal with us." And China, the same thing. They never treated us that way, right? You saw what happened a few days ago. It was terrible. And the border's not good. The border's the worst anybody's ever seen it. And what you see now, multiply it times 10, Jim. You would know how to handle it. He's the only one I know that might handle the border tougher than me.
And this
And
is a
now
used
you can
car
help
salesman, right?
us in the most humanitarian way, because that's what it is. What's happening to the kids?
Well, I should say I don't know if they're used cars, but possibly some, there's probably some on the
They're
lot.
living in squalor. They are living like nobody has ever seen anybody. There's never been.
I like the drummer, like waiting for him to say something funny to do like a rim shot.
Anything like whatsoever. And you're going to have hundreds, and you have it now. They have the airplane photos, the shops, and they call them shops. And these things are showing thousands and thousands of people coming up from South America. And it's just, look, it's a disaster. It's a humanitarian disaster from their standpoint, and it's going to destroy the country. And frankly, the country can't afford it because you're talking about massive, just incredibly massive amounts, our school systems, our hospital systems, everything. So it's a rough thing. And I just say, do you miss me yet? Booyah. Saying we did get 75 million votes, nobody's ever gotten that. They said,
I gotta say, it's gonna be less and less gratifying for him to say that every time, like, do you miss me yet? So I hope he enjoys it because it can't, how good can that really feel? Like,
yeah.
get 66 million votes, sir, and the election's over. Well, I got 75 million, and they said, but you saw what happened. 10:30 in the evening, all of a sudden, they said, it's a strange thing. Why are they closing up certain places? Right? A lot of things happening right now. I just wanted to say it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to have you at Mar-a-Lago. You are a great and beautiful couple. And for many, many years of your young life, John, special, thank you, special. Have fun.
That is incredible. And I'm very happy that I got to see that fresh just now for everybody. No, keep going.
I mean, I remember like seeing Romney the first after he had lost to Obama in 2012 at the gas station. These moments stick with you, and yeah, Trump obviously staging it perfectly. He's going to do his 2 minutes on all the problems and how he didn't solve them. Like, that's the weird thing is like the border is as bad as it's ever been. Like, motherfucker, you
worst
were
than
just
it's
in
ever been
office. Like,
in 1 month.
okay. Like,
In
maybe we
1 month.
shouldn't have put you in office.
You had 4 years. I had 4 years to deal with it, and 1 month is all done. No,
everything's a shit.
it's so good. One, I'm just gonna say this. The dude won. It's a very funny, like, to imagine, like, okay, these are his sunset years. And Trump's sunset years is just basically being a wind-up doll to show up at some folks, like, wedding dinner is very funny.
Yeah.
Looking into this guy, and I don't know how familiar you are with Florida or the Palm Beach area, Matt. But for folks who don't know this about me, very, very brief period of my life. But I did live in Florida actually, and I lived in Jupiter slash West Palm Beach area. Maybe when I was like 2 to 3. So don't have very like vivid memories of it, but I'm familiar with that part of the country at least. Because I know that West Palm Beach is not Palm Beach, right? West Palm Beach ain't as fancy as other parts of the area. And this guy who Trump is speaking at his wedding runs a auto group, a dealer in West Palm Beach. Right. So Trump is not talking to like the owner of like the Mercedes dealership in like the fanciest part of town here. I ain't saying this guy's like thing is not a big money maker or anything like that. Right. But I am saying it is very funny to go from being the president of the United States to speaking at somebody, but apparently from what we're seeing, also like very much crashing somebody's wedding who runs a auto dealership in West Palm Beach. Right.
Honestly, a fucking governor wouldn't sink that low. Like, I have better things to
But
do.
Trump would, and that's the thing that's so amazing about Donald Trump is like he needs that spotlight so much, and he's a businessman. He knows that people are coming to my resort to potentially run into me, rub elbows with me. So I'll talk to this guy who sells Dodge Rams,
Dude.
like Monday through Friday. I'll talk
We
about the
should.
Iran deal, which is also a hilarious thing to do in that situation as well.
Yeah, at some patron level, we should do a weekend at Mar-a-Lago and try to
That'd be so, but
get rub
that's
shoulders with Trump. I think we'd be escorted from the premises. I don't think I have the wardrobe.
the other thing that's so funny is like there's like the Southerner in me that's like, things are changing and there's all this like new money that's coming into Texas and Florida, and obviously Florida's like, that's deep at this point. But you're like, oh man, I hope it doesn't lose whatever made it its own like culture or whatever. It doesn't just become like a outpost for New York City rich folks. Donald Trump in this situation is incredible, right? Because this is a guy who made a shitload of money in New York and was the president of the United States and is still talking at auto dealers' weddings, right? Like Florida culture is alive and well.
This is, oh man. I mean, I can't wait for the next Mar-a-Lago speech, really. The Mar-a-Lago summit. I remember Gorka saying that. We came from the Mar-a-Lago summit. We came from the Mar-a-Lago summit with very high hopes.
I'm ready
And
for it. I'm ready for
do you want to use that as a transition to talk about Elon?
Yeah, let's talk about another asshole. So maybe that was hopeful. Yeah, we have to talk about Elon Musk, who I've been saying to folks here, I don't think that Elon Musk is in Austin as much as like he's saying that for tax reasons. Like I know he owns property and I know he's building that disgusting gigawatt truck factory nearby, but the dude is definitely not here. You know what I'm saying? Like he's not waking up on a Monday morning drinking his coffee out here. But he is trying to make a big splash in the state of Texas. And I wanted to talk about this story one, so we could remember how much of a pig Elon Musk is. And also I don't have it set up for you, Matt, but maybe I can send it to you. Those kind of Twitter spats we were talking about pre-show. I'll pop it over to you in a second. But here's Elon Musk, who is, basically using the state of Texas as like a sandbox now for all of his attempts at basically being the great space Noah of our generation. And it's a good reminder of the fact that Elon Musk, as much as he tries to present himself as like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur and I stand on my own 2 feet, he is a glorified government contractor and is very much reliant on the state for his future success. So we have this up here about Elon Musk in Brownsville, Texas. So Elon Musk went on Twitter and just told the entire world, including the mayor and all the people in this town, at the same time as he was just basically telling everybody else, that he's going to invest $30 million in Brownsville, Texas. $20 million of which, if I'm correct, is to education in the city, and $10 million is to revitalizing the downtown area. So let's get a couple of things straight here. Brownsville, Texas is a city in this country, like many other cities in this country, that is very much in need of money to undo years and years and years of systemic abuse, years and years and years of capital exploitation. But in Brownsville, Texas, there is an added layer, which is this is a town in South Texas. So on the border, it's not just like, oh, it's like 40% Hispanic. You know, it's like 85, 90% Hispanic, right? Which means it gets underfunded by state budgets. It's a town that is very much, you know, feeling the ebbs and flows of the U.S. carceral state when it comes to immigration. This is a part of the country that in, you know, a hopeful society, in a Bernie Sanders administration, for example, in a Green New Deal situation, would be receiving significant amounts of cash. And what we're seeing right now is this kind of capitalist like mirror room where now Elon Musk is promising. Again, also, I don't even want to give this guy credit yet, just knowing his history with promising big things on Twitter and following through.
Yeah, he's a impresario basically. Like yeah. He's a publicity stunt artist to the extent that makes it easier for him to get funding, and it makes it really easy for him because cities will break. Like we saw with like the Hyperloop bullshit, right? Yeah.
Well, that's the point here. So basically, you know, just to put the cards on the table for folks who are listening, Elon Musk is saying he's going to invest $30 million in the town of Brownsville, $20 million will go to the schools, and $10 million will go to, you know, revitalize the downtown. And again, I'm not against money coming to people in that community. What I am worried about is this person who is essentially using this as a way to buy a desperate town, because Elon Musk ain't doing this out of the kindness of his heart. He's doing it because he is building up his holdings in the area to test his rocket launching and, you know, spacefaring facilities. So he's doing something like this to potentially get goodwill, or more likely, so that they don't ever involve themselves in his activities. This is somebody who left California because he was against them putting in the most modest protections for workers in the middle of a global pandemic. He left that facility. He refused to follow the instructions of the state in that circumstance and endangered the lives of his workers there. And he wants to do the same thing in Texas. And his bet here is that the dysfunction of the Texas state government and the local governments here, and in particular, the impoverishment of the people of Brownsville, will allow him to do whatever he wants there. And he won't have anyone to answer to. That he can create, essentially, a company town. That ain't something that is good. It's something that is absolutely disgusting. And it should be understood as such. It should be understood as this, if he gives them the money, right, that's a problem, because he's basically trying to buy goodwill so that he can do whatever he wants. But what is far more likely, he is using this to get a lot of buzz, and then we'll say, oh, well, over 20 years, maybe I'll invest, you know, $20 million in the area, right? Or he's trying to make sure that he can get some low-wage workers in the area who have some kind of basic job training through the school system, right? It's just like, there are a million different ways as to how he's using it. And I'm not sitting here saying I know exactly what's going on, but this is not some kind of good, oh, he woke up on Monday morning. He said, oh, it's time for the people of Brownsville to get a fresh start. This is somebody trying to buy a curry favor. Yeah. This is somebody who has too much fucking money and a shitload of money that was made because of not just contracts that he has with the government, but also because of direct, purposeful policy from the Federal Reserve and our federal government to prop up people like Elon Musk at the expense of people like us. These are questions certainly of worker power versus capitalism, but these are also questions of democracy. Do we want some asshole from South Africa who made his money out of a family fortune of blood emerald mines, right, who left California because he didn't want to make skirt around basic protections for workers to make sure that they didn't contract the novel coronavirus, right? And they came to Texas because he thought that people here would be too stupid and too desperate to say anything about him. Two fucking middle fingers up to this asshole, man.
Yeah, we don't know his exact plan and motive, but you can probably reduce it to he's going to profit from this somehow.
He's trying to buy the city. He's trying to rebuild the old, like, 1800s style company town thing.
Like Lowell, Massachusetts or whatever.
And, like, Austin's, you know, Austin's a tough town because there's so much big money coming here. But Austin is not a city you can buy like you could potentially influence Brownsville.
Right.
So he's making the decision here that, oh, I can put enough money in Brownsville that I can, because it's an underfunded city, it's a city that needs a lot of resources that it's not getting because of capitalism, because of racism, because of all these different factors. And he's saying, oh, this is a part of the country that I can do the goodwill thing here and then just take advantage of folks down the line.
Yeah.
And yeah, Matt, you have this good internet stuff here because it's worthwhile pointing out with Elon Musk
too. Well, yeah, introduce this Onion. Well, I guess I'll just put it up here. So the Onion did a how the richest person in every state made their money thing, and Elon Musk, Texas apartheid. Elon, shame on you.
You gotta do it slower. Wait, you gotta do it slower for folks who aren't getting the joke. How did the richest person in each state make their money? And for all the other states, they have like a paragraph or whatever. But for Elon Musk, they have the very terse apartheid.
Yeah, let's see if we have some other. Yeah, right. That's hilarious. I mean, the Onion can occasionally do some pretty radical stuff. It's interesting that that's what's funny. Maybe that's just my biases. I mean,
the Onion's not bad, man. The Onion does some really funny stuff.
I also want to share these two images, one from a Skeletor and one from Optagon in our Discord. This is the one from Optagon. We've got some bum steer animations here. So here is this. I really like the timelessness of this, like the simplicity and the pen ink art style. It looks like something like that it could have been written on like a napkin in like 1906. And then we also have this one from Skeletor, which is a little bit more of a comic. We can actually zoom in on this a little bit. We got Bill Gates up here saying it's not child slavery, it's early occupation development. The cow, yeah, bum steer of the week there. So yeah, thank you to our two artists there. I love that stuff, really tickles me.
And they're great. And the reason we're doing that is because this segment is called the bum steer of the week.
Yep, the bum steer, which as we discussed is both can be a cattle term in terms of gave me a bad steer or a bum steer of a ship. So we conceptually marry those two and now we achieve unity.
And I appreciate the kind of additions to these drawings because I was making sure that folks know that, you know, the steer is a bull that's got their nuts cut off. right? So like that's the kind of terminology behind a bum steer, is that, you know, they can't have babies and they're going to be, you know, they're not going to be the, you know, the bull of the herd or anything like that.
Mm, interesting. I wonder if the word steer, like steer in the...
Yeah, I don't know. Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
All right, enough etymology. Let's maybe take some Discord questions. And then we'll
wait. Before we go on, you got to do this last thing with Elon Musk with the onion, because it's very funny.
Right.
Yeah, pull this up. So they had the onion joke, which is like is funny enough. But this like insanely terminally online nerd who is like, you know, that's the thing. The reason Elon Musk is so frustrating to deal with is like not only because he is just like a capitalist villain of our time, but he is just a creature of the online swamp. And look at his response here to the the Onion. If you could read it, Matt, I can't read it off
your screen. Yeah, he says, shame on you, Onion. This is why people are switching to the Babylon Bee. And he adds the Babylon Bee.
Which also, the Babylon Bee sucks. Like, the Babylon Bee is not funny. I'm the first person to, like, think conservative humor is funny if it's on point. The Babylon Bee is extremely try-hard shit. And honestly, I bet you, like, a big part of their success, or, you know, moderate success, is because they have morons like Elon Musk, like, pumping them up all the time.
Yeah, like, their jokes, honestly, the one I remember is, upon the landing of the Mars rover, it was Elon Musk greets Mars rover, like, with an advanced civilization. Like, he was already up there and says, oh, welcome. It's like, no, that's exactly, he's not doing that. He's not capable of that. He's not remotely capable of what NASA is capable of. I'm also sick. Can I say, I'm sick of the fucking up and down rocket trips, right? Like, I'm so sick of having to hear about how that's this fucking thing I should be awestruck by. Like, that. This is like a logistics feat. What people weren't surprised, weren't thrilled by the actual moon race because of like the efficiency that they did it with. They went to the moon. Yeah, and hit a fucking golf ball around. It's not like, oh, this is actually going to save X amount on every time we send something to space. Yeah. I don't give a fuck. I don't care. I'm sure it is going to be nice. Like, that's not going to my bottom line. And they're crashing and blowing up all the time anyway. So it's like, well, I mean, where are these? Yeah, I'm just like, literally, you're asking me to get excited about something that's just going to save FedEx's bottom line when they eventually go into space shipping. Like, I don't give a fuck about landing a rocket backwards.
I think you're 100% right. And I know we need to move on, but I also just want to remind people of something. And it's been something I've been reminding folks, you know, personally lately about Elon Musk. Do you remember that shit? Was it in Thailand? Where those poor kids were stuck in the cave.
Yep.
And Elon Musk gets himself involved in that. And all the divers and people who are actually doing the work of protecting and, you know, helping these kids out. Elon Musk creates a submarine that they did not need nor ask for. And then when they say, hey, this is not helpful for us helping out these children, he then... slandered the divers who ended up saving the children and called them all pedophiles.
Literally, yeah, implied they were pedophiles, calling them sus. Which, like, bro, if we're talking about sus, like, you're the one who's getting upset about connections to apartheid being drawn. Like, your family is sus.
He had no evidence, and he said it was coming. He's like, it's coming. Like, and- the reckoning. Like Papa John, you know, kind of thing, like the reckoning will come.
He got sued for that. I mean, yeah, the funny thing is, just fast forward, is there was two things that were happening there. Either he had information that guy was a pedophile and he was sitting on it, which is insane, and but also like semi-plausible because of his connections to like massive private spy firms like Palantir or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, look, I don't know if he related to Thiel, but I... like a rich guy having access to information, like, or hiring people to dig in, like, that's notable. Or he's just slandering the guy and making shit up, which it turned out he was doing because he got sued and didn't have any evidence, and he said he was joking. Which, like, I remember that tweet And I remember not thinking, oh, that's a funny joke. I think, oh, that is definite slander. And I am someone who does not like that. I don't like libel law. I don't like people being sued over speech. I think it's dangerous. At the same time, you can't be a rich man.
Saying shit like that, bro, because they didn't want your fucking toy summary that you made. Like, that's
unbelievable. The thing that's so crazy about
this, Tom. I know, like, if this goes public or whatever, the Elon stans were not convincing them, but for the general person in the public, this dude is an insane narcissist. And we did a lot on TMBS talking about all the ins and outs of why this person's a problem. Maybe check that out. But honestly, if like you are in 2021 spending your time trying to defend somebody who made a shitload of money while you suffered over this past year, I don't know how much work or like how much I can provide to you to build that bridge for you to understand why this guy is a villain.
Yeah. You know, I think the tide's turning. I got to say, well, I guess we'll see. He's being more like, I mean, there's a less bipartisan.
There's been so much pathetic shit with him in Austin. Like, I was telling you this before we got on, because it's like, especially for like older Texans, it's like, oh, we're finally being treated like seriously, that like the, you know, one of the wealthiest people in America wants to come and live here, and not realizing he's playing you for a chump.
Yeah.
He wants to come here because he knows that the government here is not going to treat him like they should. Right. They're not going to put restrictions on him to make sure that he doesn't expose all of his workers to serious harm from a, you know, a massive global pandemic. That they aren't going to come at him for environmental damage. Like, he is not coming here because he started listening to Guy Clark and he's like, oh man, I love Texas poetry and the Texas way. He's coming here because he's like, oh, they're not going to tax me and they're going to let me fucking destroy the state for my own personal profit. And he thinks you're a chump.
Yeah.
Like, he thinks you are a chump and you should be pissed off. And like, if you are a good Texas nationalist, right, you should be pissed that Elon Musk is here. You should not be happy about it.
Word.
But you can drop that for now. Because it gets me too worked up. It really makes me mad.
Man, that sucks.
It does suck, dude.
Let's get some questions here from the old Discord live show Q&A. Ooh, got a number of them. Mr. Edwin, David, how familiar are you with Karl Popper's critique of Marxism? Are the elements of Marxism that you would say are empirically supported more than others? Is Marxism still useful, even if it's not a quote science? Give me your thoughts.
Well, I might not be. Marxist science is, let me start with the science thing.
Yeah.
Because that is one thing that drives people up the wall. But yet all across this country, we have a university program called political science. Right, that people don't get worked up about as a concept. Right, but it's like the idea of Marxist science is treating society scientifically. So you're dropping kind of like moral, even like sometimes, like if you do good Marxist analysis sometimes, and we do this on the show a lot, I say like, hey, here's us like being moralistic about this question, but here's just like what's happening, right? That's like the science in the most general sense. What Popper's talking about is like, oh, well, it's unfalsifiable, right? Well, it is true that we can't run history as like an experiment to say like, oh, we're going to make this society do this thing and this society do that thing. Obviously, when even if we could do that, it would be insane and a waste of people's lives to do that. Right, like, you know what I'm saying, like we could put communities like here's a capitalist society and here's a socialist society and put them against each other. That'd be an immoral thing if that was possible. But what the scientific aspect of Marxism is to say that there are things that we can locate within history that we can then use to analyze other systems in the future and also in the past. And it's that kind of scientific perspective that is very critical to Marxism as a field of study, right? Like the idea and the hope of Marxism was that in the same way that the early forms of like understanding evolution were, right, very radical, not perfect, that like Marxism was the beginning of building a social science that could understand the way that societies work, both through history, like in the past, right? But also potentially in the future. And that's all. I mean, it's a big claim. It's a big aspiration. But like the kind of, the way that people treat that as if it's like a dogmatic understanding, I think it's always been strange to me. Mm-hmm. Because it's extremely humble. It's saying like, oh, we're just trying to understand this in the same way that you understand anything else.
Yeah, science is not dogma, actually. Like, yeah. It's, right, yeah.
So I mean, and I know that's not Popper's like full criticism of Marxism, but his criticism of Marxism on that point is that like it's an unfalsifiable doctrine because you can never do the experiment. So therefore, blah blah blah. And it's like, I don't know. Like if you want to criticize Marxism, like there's some things you can, I don't know, like there's some avenues you can get into with the theory or whatever, right? And maybe we can have a conversation about that. But if what you're worked up about is the idea of it being like a science, I think you're just getting worked up about words. And yeah, I don't find that to be very moving.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say like doing historical study independently of like a political project, like I do with like literary hangover. Mm-hmm. I will say like Marxism as a view and looking at just objective relationships in terms of who's the owner and who's the worker and like those concepts, it's the most useful thing I've come across by far.
Yeah.
To analyze basically any period of time, whether you go back into like antiquity and those sorts of relationships, like there's always an exploited laboring class. There's always people who's are basically accruing it as owners or kings or whatever, right? And commodities and yeah, all that's in profit. Like even before like capitalism develops properly, you could still use those concepts to, I think, lead you to some of the most insightful, commentary or understanding of those time periods.
Not to, you know, open it up again, but like, I think the reason that people get too worked up about the science term honestly comes from a kind of fetishization of like science and like liberal philosophy. Or like the dominant philosophy, but maybe that's a conversation for another time. Like, oh, science is so holy, right? And it ends up not being what it actually was, which is like a very rigorous way of trying to understand the world that was constantly exposing itself to critique. And Marxism, like there's Marxism of like the militant, and there's Marxism of like the scientist, and like people who really are like trying to engage with the world in like a scientific, philosophical way. Are pretty, there's a lot of developments that happen post-Marx is what I'm trying to say within Marxist theory. And maybe some folks aren't familiar with that. But anyways, I think the hang up over the word science is a misplaced criticism.
Yeah. Mr. Edwin's got one for me. Let me find it. By 2022, which faction of the American right wing do you predict will come on top? Will it be neocons of the 2000s, the woke libertarians of the 2010s, the sensible never Trumper centrists, or the deranged all but in name Christian national socialists of the early 2020s? Make your picks now. I think it's gonna be like Marjorie Taylor Greene types, my opinion. Like they're gonna have the most electoral wins in their sails, I think. I don't think there's a lot of appetite for neocons running as such. Woke libertarians, like, I don't know. And frankly, I think a lot of this depends on how inept the Democrats are, maybe what they do. Like, I think what's going on the right is I don't have a clear read of where it's going right now, I guess. Besides, I think you can always kind of count on devolution.
No, that's a good point.
Social justice wizard Matt and David, y'all started this project off in fairly enviable circumstances in the middle of a pandemic following tragic loss. Just want to say I really think Left Reckoning has risen to the occasion. Oh, thank you. The content is awesome, and the show has been amazing so far. My question is, what is on y'all's vision board for the future of the show? Format changes, live stuff, tech stuff, post-pandemic plans, crossover ups, whatever can you tease us with? Yeah, well, I think what we have going on this Sunday with Paul O'Connell, James Connolly is a, we want to do definitely more of that. We also will eventually do more gaming on Twitch, are two things that come immediately to mind. What else do you think, David?
I mean, definitely, you know, we want to do more stuff just to reach out to all of y'all all the time. But I mean, the two big things that I want to start being able to do, and one, they're both limited by the pandemic, but also once I am able to get enough money to get a truck or a car, which has been one of the more frustrating aspects of my new life, I definitely want to be able to take things on the road a little bit more too. And to be able to drive to Alabama for stuff like we're seeing right now. And like, that's something that just like, no pressure on you, Matt, but like, that's something that I'd like to do just because it's like, I don't know. I love seeing all the different parts of this country. And I definitely want this show to be a part of left movements and stuff going on all around. So being able to be more mobile is definitely one thing to look forward to probably 6 months a year, honestly.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the other thing is connected to that too, is like, not to get, you know, we all know the tragedy we all dealt with, but like, you know, I think a lot about one of my last conversations with Michael was talking about going to Bolivia and going to Ecuador and spending time in that part of the world. I definitely would like to find a way to do that through this project as well.
Yeah, that's definitely on the broader vision board for sure.
To figure out the best way to do it, but that's something that 100% is like, that's the big stuff that we definitely want to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Less of a question, more of a rant. Joe Snuffy, as a certified strength and conditioning specialist. Okay. So we might have to play this Marjorie Taylor Greene thing. I'll put it up behind me while I read this and then we can enjoy it. So it says people can see it over the move my shoulders to read this. As a certified strength and conditioning specialist with a master's science in exercise science, I'm qualified to shred Marjorie Taylor Greene's exercise form. This is interesting to me because, look, I am not a big gym guy. I basically do the machines for weights, and I'll do some treadmill and maybe some elliptical cardio, and that's it. I don't do any of this crazy shit. But I got to put up this Marjorie Taylor Greene CrossFit thing because it just doesn't look right to me. So here she is. Now, again, like, there's a little bit more bounce in the knees. And
you're going to have a hard time with your back with that, for sure.
Yeah, a bit on your heels or off your – on the, and then this – seems
I don't
like
know what that is.
So that is.
I don't know if I could do that, so I can't make any comments about her form there. Well, but it does,
no, the thing is like, I think it's not even as hard as a regular pull up because you're using so much of your motion to like get up there, and you're not holding it at all. Like, it's literally, these are called butterfly or kipping or something pull ups, and it's been interesting this because you. Everybody is roasting this except CrossFitters who are like, actually, no, that's pretty much how you do it. And I just want to say to CrossFitters, be fucking careful because I don't think this is right, guys. I think you might have bought into something that you shouldn't have. And so Just Nubby says, everything is wrong. On her hang clean, she swings the bar out way in front of herself and uses her back to get it up, which is terrible and totally unnecessary because it's a hang clean, not a proper clean. Then when she snatches it over her head, she doesn't actually catch the weight by locking her shoulder blades. So instead of the force safely dispersing throughout her torso, it all goes right into her mid-back and rotator cuff. Her pull-ups are garbage because she's only doing the first third of the movement. Her elbows have to bend to 90 degrees to count, and she doesn't bend them at all. So even by CrossFit standards, this is pure trash. If she was at a gym that actually coached people for competitions, none of these reps would count. Sorry for the rant that triggered me. Now, I also saw, and I don't recommend watching this, but Stephen Robbins, Yakima Abogado, sent me some videos or a video of a motherfucker doing that pull up, flopping around like a motherfucker thing, flipped over, lost his grip on the way up, basically did a backflip, landed on his back and like his legs over top of him. And you and I watched it and I'm like, oh yeah, I can see how that would happen actually. Like it made a it's Marjorie Taylor Greene's gonna fucking kill herself in her weight room. Like and she might film
it. Well, there
are
worse ways to go out, yeah.
And I hope she films it if it happens. I don't hope it happens, but if it happens, I hope she films it just so there's no QAnon conspiracy stuff, I guess. But like honestly, you fly and you kill yourself. Or even like that the clean she's doing. If her knee snaps with all that bounce, because to me it looks like you're relying on like the bounce of your ligaments to like push that thing up.
Yeah.
If that ligament snaps, you're going down and that thing's coming down straight on top of you. But some cross
destroyed, absolutely destroyed. So I have a serious question for you. Compare. So you've seen this, you've seen the form, you've seen the angles, right? Compare this to the Tulsi workout videos that got so many people to turn their back on Bernie Sanders.
Look,
are you gonna support the Tulsi? Because I feel like you got to.
I have to support Tulsi. I mean, yeah, Tulsi's not.
Tulsi's got the form.
She's not getting anybody hurt. She's getting them maybe a little bit aroused.
No, that's not what Marjorie does. She got some wackos so aroused that they turn their back on like making a better future to just like stand endlessly. The Tulsi Gabbard,
dude, phenomenal, yeah, whatever that. Tulsi Gabbard's like, I've heard those commercials are for like Pilates that I remember, yeah. I, as a young man, was like, oh, that's an interesting commercial to look at closely. she used that technique against Bernie and it was one of the most successful. But also, are you familiar with the phrase going hard in the paint? Waka Flocka Flame has a song, Going Hard in the Paint. I don't know, like, for the sports, forget. Yeah, for the sports metaphor, like, it is... Marjorie Taylor Greene's going very hard.
She's definitely going hard in the paint. But like, all right, so you got the Tulsi workout vid, you got whatever the hell the Marjorie, the MTG like flop vid. You know, the same quality was the Bernie Sanders fucking the Bernie Sanders jump shot vid. When Bernie was just dropping nice mid-range jumpers.
To defend that, I think the cool thing about Bernie's videos was that if you were playing like 3-on-3, you by the end of that you might pick Bernie over Obama, because
you know Bernie's got that good outlet.
Like, yeah, Bernie might not have the athleticism anymore, but he's got the form down and he can do that set shot from outside. And okay. Yeah, it's like
I ain't a good basketball player, but like. I'm good on the rebounds and I can do a drive and make a layup, right? I'm picking Bernie for sure, right? Because
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whenever I'm fucked up, jammed up, just throw it to Uncle Bernie, man. He's gonna, he'll bring us home.
Let's see, who'd be on, imagine me, you and Bernie versus Obama and the Pod Save Johns and how how satisfying that would be.
I would dominate the boards in that one, I'm just saying. Yeah. Put Big Dave on the boards of an NBA.
Yeah, it would be like I'll
be. Do you have a good three? Do you have a good three?
I can shoot a three. Ooh, so,
that's what I'm saying. We're ready to go.
But I'll run point. We can just have Bernie camp out on 3-point line, and me and you run the pick and roll. And either you are floating to the hoop, and I'll float it to you over John Favreau.
So I had my growth spurt a little bit earlier than most other people. So like, what, I don't know. When I was 12, I was close. I'm about 6'2 now. When I was 12, I was like 5'11, something like that, which is pretty tall for like
right.
that age. And I don't know why, but my little YMCA rec league had 8-foot goals.
Mm.
So I was one of the most dominant basketball players. I was like Shaquille O'Neal, you know what I mean? Like they would just throw the ball to me. My coach was like, never, ever dribble. Right, just like take it, and I would just stand underneath the
you know, the hoop and would just like shoot until I made it, because I would just catch my own rebound.
Right. Yes, that's the classic. Is like your shooting percentage isn't the highest, but you are padding your rebound stats.
but they sacrificed me, because that was a year of basketball development that was just completely ruined by an artificial growth spurt that obviously didn't last very long.
Yeah, that does suck. There is some bad incentive.
Championship, man, gold medal. I still got that somewhere around here.
You know, that's the thing about incentives of incentives of minor league or little league basketball coaching is all for that victory. It's all for the trophy. It's not for developing skill sets for the next team.
That's the problem with youth sports.
We really got to address this. Okay, let's see here. Two-part question from Pirate Disco King. I have a two-parter. I don't know if we'll get to all these bunch, but we'll save some. I have a two-part. You both like talking sports on the show when you can, so I wanted to ask your thoughts on some of the right-wing tendencies cultivated by professional American sports: jingoism, submission to authority, pro-military, anti-BLM, etc. And with these in mind, how do you think leftists should approach following professional sports, and how might professional sports look different in a post-capitalist society? Much love and solidarity from San Diego. I think it is by engaging with sports and not, being pro jingoism and authority and military and BLM. Like, and I think on certain extremes you see it. Like Charlie Kirk is so funny because he's so ready to throw in the towel at sports because
he doesn't care.
Yeah, but it's like right, like, and I fundamentally think, we talked about the limitations of, for instance, the LeBron school of politics and how it might be co-opted, for instance, right? But it's not going to be, it's not right wing, I don't think, particularly based on who the players are, right? So I think it's only right wing if you have it dictated by the owners.
I think that's exactly it. And all of these things can be interpreted in a very different way, right? In an extremely individual culture. I guess we're talking about team sports here primarily, mm-hmm. right? But in an extremely individualist culture, like we have these things, sports, right? NBA, football, that actually promote community and being a part of a unit. And football is a really great example of this. Obviously you have the quarterback, but think about that. The rest of the guys out there, like they might be known to like super fans, but you put on a uniform and you cover your face and you represent, the University of Texas or the Kansas City Chiefs or whatever. Right. And obviously there's all that kind of historical stuff that goes in the team names, with that example. But you actually become not just, I'm whatever my name is. I'm an offensive lineman. Like you become a member of this program. Like there are various like socialist values in sports too, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is like, and it's not about subverting yourself in any kind of terrible way. It's about saying like, I'm going to be a part of a unit. And that means something to me and to the community. And like, there are very great like left-wing socialist values in sports that I think are worth upholding, and supporting. The right wing stuff, I think it comes down to two things primarily. The left being a subcultural movement in this country, because across the globe, there are like, for example, soccer teams that are like left wing teams. Like the idea of like, being sports or anti-sports being a political question is very American. And I don't have the answer to how to deal with that today. But I would also say that like a lot of lefties in the U.S. are big sports fans and also play sports and understand these systems. So I don't know.
Yeah, I got to say, go ahead.
I was just saying, I think as a wrap up there is like, I think it's worthwhile to uphold those kind of ideas, but also to understand it's like, just don't evacuate territory to the right wing. It's just a disaster to do that.
Yeah. I mean, sports were a big part of my life for most of my childhood and early young adulthood. Like I played basketball, baseball, and football. And I miss that team atmosphere. There is something about mm-hmm. like being in the middle of a game and just reacting based on, you know, instinct and like things happening really fast and trusting people and like the, and I haven't, and maybe it's because of like the weird sort of like I've never experienced that in the workplace really, like
I mean, no
right, like that is, I miss it honestly. I want to play pickup basketball.
Can I share a quick story?
Yeah.
Because it's something that's really important in my life. And, you know, I played soccer pretty seriously for a long time. And, you know, when we're talking about this immigration stuff, it's one both like morally important to me, but I also just remember so clearly some of the shit that I saw from my friends and comrades and teammates with this. And I'll tell this quickly, and you won't use any names, obviously. But, you know, I was on a team that was very competitive, and we were playing, you know, our big game, and it was for my high school team, and I'll never forget it. It was like the end of the game, and just terrible officiating. A player was clearly offsides, like by about like 15 yards. I was a goalkeeper, and this the player I'm going to talk about was a defender on my team. Very clearly offsides by about 10 yards, and like, you know, just comes in and scores at the end of the game. It was bullshit, and this referee fucked up, and my teammate like confronted him on his mistake, right? So like, whatever, you know, I know we're all taught to not get mad, but you get mad, it's a big game, right?
Yeah.
The referee pushed him, right? Because the referee was like fucking 24 years old, right? Because it's like whatever. So the other player pushed him back and then gets a red card, right? Bullshit, it's on camera, insane scenario that this poor kid had to deal with. You know what happened? One, you know, the kid obviously dealt with a lot of like trouble from his school. They sent him to juvie. And when they were saying, this is not unfair, we have video to show that this is like, was very much, you know, antagonized by this young referee. The principal of my high school went to his, to where he lived. And he said, we know your family's illegal. And if you make a stink, we will alert ICE as to where you are, right?
Jesus.
And it was one of the most terrible things I've seen happen to somebody. But I don't know. I don't want to speak for him, but like in that horrible thing, we have no control over this. But there was community. We were spending time with him every day for a year until he came back, joined the team. We ended up playing the same team and beat them like 5-0.
Oh shit!
Return, you know, and like, anyways. Yeah, I know I'm going on a tangent. It's a little personal or whatever, and not every life story like lines up personally with a point or anything like that. But what I'm saying is like, this was something that brought a lot of different people together from all different kinds of circumstances and let us all have a common expression and understanding of each other. And that's something that's really good for human beings to do. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, some people get worked up about the kind of masculinity of like a lot of athletics and stuff like that. But, and what I'm saying is like my experience was obviously like exceptional and unique to that, you know, particular set of circumstances, but it's not unique in the sense that sports has brought a lot of different people together in solidarity and love and care for each other. And that is a good value and a good thing to have.
Yeah.
We can frame it in better ways than the right wingers can, and we should never evacuate that space to other folks.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Waz does this really well, the way he talks, the understanding of entertainment in the broader historical context of, you know, bread and circuses. You understand why people, I think, that aren't sports fans lose a little bit of patience for it. But I think, yeah, there is you can have that understanding and also still participate in, I think, a very important and honestly just amazing sports. It's amazing how sports develop in society, and man and humankind is like a game playing animal is just something, and a social animal among that. It's very cool in my opinion.
And we can get this. We've had this sometimes, I think, with like being able to do this show, maybe. Not just Left Reckoning, but TMBS, like the experience of like being in a community and like getting things and like achieving something as a group is very rare. But you know what I'm talking about, like that yes factor, like, you know, if you're in a close basketball game, somebody makes the three and it matters and everybody just feels like elation at the same time, or, you know, and you can make it metaphors. I'll check the Discord to see.
Yeah. I think we should be back soon here. There we are. Hey, folks. Sorry about that. We're right about the end here. Let me take one more question. My stream
lag. I guess we're back. I think we're good now.
Yeah. Okay. We could take a few more then. I'm not sure. I hope it's not my connection. I don't think it is. I think it's the software just died.
All right. But we're anyway. Good now. Everyone's saying.
Okay, cool. So let's see. We got a lot of questions. We'll have a lot left over. David, your take on AOC and DSA was spot on, but how would you recommend we actually try to convert a DSA chapter into a party line force? Is this a matter of simply creating a party line and pairing it with resources for those candidates who sign on? Basically, what's the first step?
I think the first step is political education. And I know that seems like a comp out, but like, this is what I'm trying to get to with these streams is like, you can start the website, you can file for state elections. There are like things that you can do to make a party, but until you build that consciousness, it's just as you, on Sunday. Oh man, I know it's getting a little bit later, but we should make sure we do just a teeny bit of James Connolly action.
Yeah.
I'm just realizing. To quote James Connolly, it's like, you are just like John the Baptist, like, you know, reciting, saying that like the reckoning is coming, right? Like, we have to build the workers' consciousness to make the party viable. The point is, like, we will not have a viable party until we have a working class consciousness. And that's it. I'm sorry. It's just like, so it's not an easy answer. I'm sorry there. But like, the point is like, the reason we're in the situation that we are in right now is not because we haven't like dotted our I's and crossed our T's when it comes to like structuring a party, but rather that we have to do the work of convincing working people that they should be a part of our organizations. The hope would be with the DSA that you can start to do that work or whatever organization you want to be a part of. But like, that's the kind of baseline there.
Yeah. There's a whole great section on unifying the union movements that are spread across different industries. One of the LOL parts, because I know I did tease specifically one of that. So this is him talking about holidays. Oh, the capitalist has his anxieties too, and the worker has often a good time. Sure, say, where were you for the holidays? Were you tempted to go abroad? Did you visit Europe? Did you riot in all the abandonment of a wage slave let loose among the pleasure haunts of the world? That's one of just like very man. You could tell like the like I guess. I think this was developed over the course of time. I assume based on just it described as workshop talk.
You could tell he was speaking to people.
People, actual people. Yes, exactly.
Which is why, like, and for folks, you know, just if we didn't introduce that clearly, like for folks who are confused, like we're reading from James Connolly, Socialism Made Easy, which will come out on Sunday. The talk we did with Paul O'Connell. Yeah. And he's there talking about, oh, you think it's hard for you to figure out what to do with your one day off a year? Think about how hard it is for your boss to figure out what to do with 2 months.
Yeah. And so like, yeah, perhaps you traversed the lakes and the fjords of Norway, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes real and satirical very quickly. So perhaps you lay in bed all day in order to save a meal and listen to your wife wondering how she can make ends meet with the day's pay short and the weekly wages. And whilst you squandered your substance in riotous living, did you ever stop and think of your master, your poor, dear, overworked, tired master?
Did you ever think about your master, which is, I'm sorry, that's just an amazing.
Did you ever stop to reflect upon the pitiable condition of that individual who so kindly provides you with employment and does no useful work himself in order that you may get plenty of it?
That's killer. And here's another one that I really like too, on confiscation, right? Where somebody like, oh, is the socialist movement about, you know, robbing the rich, right?
Right.
He said, we would certainly confiscate the property of the capitalist class, but we do not propose to rob anyone. On the contrary, we propose to establish honesty once and forever on the basis of our social relations. This socialist movement is indeed worthy to be entitled the great anti-theft movement of the 20th century. You see, confiscation is one great certainty of the future for every businessman outside of the trust. It lies with him to say if it will be confiscation by the trust in the interest of the trust, or confiscation by socialism in the interest of all. Which I just think is such a good, I like the frame is like the socialist movement is the great anti-theft movement.
It's amazing. Like accepting their terms and using them against them is a brilliant move. And it seems very like, it seems geared toward our time almost. Like, like you see like, I don't know, like Carl Bayer, Matt Bruning style, like trolling of certain arguments. There's this other part here that I really like as a view of what Scandinavian socialism is.
Yes.
And he's talking about, you know, contrast this woeful picture of divided and disorganized unionism in America with the following account from the New York Sun of the manner in which the socialist unionists in Scandinavia stand together in a fight against the common enemy, irrespective of craft interests or craft contracts. And here's the bit from this news article, which is just amazing. And like a vision of like a different world, that a better world, basically. A short sojourn in Scandinavia, particularly in Copenhagen and the southern part of Sweden, gives one an abject lesson in socialism. In some way or other, the socialists have managed to capture all the trade unions in these parts, and between them have caused a reign of terror for everybody who is unfortunate enough to own a business of any sort. Heaven help him if he fires one of his helps or tries to assert himself in any way. He is immediately declared in blockade. This socialist term means practically the same as a boycott. If the offending businessman happens to be a retail merchant, all workmen are warned off his premises. The drivers for the wholesale houses refuse to deliver goods at his store. The truckmen refuse to cart anything to or from his place, and so on. I mean, badass is, I guess, what I wrote in the subtitle.
It's killer,
like, man. I mean, that when people say like, oh, we should just be like Scandinavia, not like, especially when it comes from like the capitalist friendly, like media figures, it's like, okay, let's go to that. And then we can talk.
Well, in particular there, when that kind of like, they're talking about, they're like the trash men are like refusing to pick up the trash from the rich. It's definitely a different kind of vibe than this kind of happy go lucky arm in arm, locked in love and solidarity, you know, Scandinavian social democracy.
That, yeah. It's not write your congressman.
Yeah. Right. Like, this is like, fuck you, asshole. Like, yeah, you're the top. We're gonna wage war against you with every weapon that we have,
and we're all gonna be, and we don't even need fucking Twitter. Like, we're all gonna be on the same page anyway. I mean, that is, it's fucking inspiring, and we got to go back or get that back somehow. David,
yeah,
I think we should maybe take one more. Let's take one more. I just, I'm feeling generous because we have such a big big thing of questions. I feel like we should get to a little bit more. Terry McCulloch's FBI file says, I enjoyed your focus on the liberal elite north, but Virginia's weed legalization still being sorted out. Should Virginia's be opposed to the bill because it creates new penalties aimed at giving cops avenues to target by POC communities? I would say so. Or because the bill has no social justice components. That sounds bad. I would check out Brian and that the news. I don't know if I have. I forget what I. Oh yeah, it's they probably have it at the news station. So check out that. But I imagine that sounds troubling. Although Virginia has been doing some good things, like getting rid of death penalty and
That was a good moment.
And the General Lee. So. Sunday, folks, patrons, you'll all be getting the Sunday release with Paul O'Connell. Very excited for you to check that out. And next week we'll also be talking with Nathan Bernard on a union breaking attempt in Maine, and we have some more stuff for you then. So David, anything you want to say before we jump off here?
No, for sure. We appreciate all of y'all patrons, and we'll get to the rest of the questions next week, I think.
All right, see you, folks.